Got your barf bag handy? The Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast is on the air. A Medicare podcast to end all Medicare podcasts. And now proving you can take the boy out of Oklahoma, Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. My Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, just told you that I am Doug Jones, your Medicare expert for today, and maybe for tomorrow, too, if I play my cards right. Drew McMillan and his wife and young daughter are going to be missing their family's trip to Arizona. That's going to occur early next month because he's got to stay in Canada and work. He's gainfully employed as a producer and an accountant. We haven't talked about Drew in quite some time, but he's a quite an accomplished young guy in his mid-20s. His lovely bride, Magda, and his daughter, Nora, are lucky to have him. They bought a two-flat. They've rehabbed, and they have some tenants paying some of the freight. But Drew is a CPA, as well as an on-air personality at Northern Canadian television station. So he's got quite the varied background in show business, and I'm hoping that he can turn that into a major coup. Anyway, as he told you, this is the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, inspired by my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2022, Simplest and Easiest Guide Ever. You can get that book at Barnes & Noble if you don't want to deal with Amazon, or you can get it in Amazon. You can get it in the hardcover version, the paperback version, which is the most popular, and the Kindle or ebook version, which is the most cost-effective. It'll cost you less than $4 if that's what you want to get. And coming soon is the Audible version, so you can listen to these dulcet tones tell you everything you've ever wanted to know about Medicare. Once you spend a short time reading that book, you're going to know more about Medicare than, I'm going to say, roughly 98% of all the people in the United States. You're going to know more than 99.9% of all the people in the world, if we care to measure the Medicare knowledge of people in other countries. But it's immaterial because Medicare only applies to Americans. So read the book, learn about Medicare. It won't take you very long, and then contact me, and I will help you get through your encounter with Medicare with flying colors. So Randy Carson, our podcast engineer, is staring at me. He appears to be ensconced in the Medicare for the Lazy Man Tower in one of our conference rooms. Is that right, Randy? Is that where you are?
It is. Well, you know how things work in large corporations. Mm-hmm. I had to reserve this, you know, a couple of days ago, and that made sure that we would have, you know, privacy and quiet to do the recording. But yes, that's exactly where I am. I'm in the executive tower off in one of our conference rooms.
Well, are those people that, did you lock the door, or why are those people gathering outside the door? It looks like they're waiting to pounce when you leave the room.
There is a lot of noses pressed against the window. I did lock the door, and I think they're just wanting to see how two professional podcasters actually do their job.
All right. Well, let's not disappoint them then. I've got an article here that I found, as I may have told you, whining and complaining as I want to do, that we recently had our bedrooms and closets and bathrooms painted and on the inside of the house. And that meant we had to move everything we own out of those rooms. And during that process, I discovered some stuff I hadn't seen in years and years and years. And what it was a box of magazines given to me by a friend, and included in that box of magazines were a whole bunch of Reader's Digests from 2016. And so I thought, well, geez, you know, I wonder if anything interesting has happened, and I wasn't aware of it. So I sat down and read through all of these things, and I ran across an article that seems to be medically relevant. And it involves organ donation, a guy who wants to donate his organs when he dies. And he was frustrated in that endeavor. So I thought maybe this would be interesting. So I thought, let's give it a try. This is from the 2016 Reader's Digest. I think it's March of 2016. And it's about a guy named W.B. So W.B. thought donating his organs would bring meaning to his ALS diagnosis. ALS is Lou Gehrig's disease, and it's just a horrible thing to be suffering through. He was diagnosed with ALS. He was shocked to discover that patients like him are banned from this final act of heroism. And the title of the article is A Legacy Denied. And it was originally printed in the Atlantic magazine, I guess. So our patient, we'll call him WB, is a 56-year-old father of three who until 2 years ago had always been healthy. He had worked in jobs ranging from automotive repair to sales, taking great pride in providing for his family. All of that ended in February of 2014 when he was diagnosed with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, commonly known as Lou Gehrig's disease, a neurodegenerative disease characterized by progressive muscle weakness. ALS leads to the loss of all voluntary movement, difficulty breathing, and in the end, death. So once the initial shock passed, WB began researching his condition intensively. He learned that he was unlikely to survive 5 years, and that in the meantime, his quality of life would diminish dramatically. With limited options, many patients retreat, but quite bravely, WB had other ideas. He decided if he was going to die, he would like to try to save another person's life in the process. And so in May of 2014, he approached the University of Wisconsin Transplant Program, where we are surgeons, the author of this this article, and his buddies are surgeons there, and he wanted to be an organ donor. Initially, he had assumed that he would arrange for all of his organs to be procured when he died. But then he read that his kidneys, the kidneys from a living donor, work better, and they last longer. For one thing, the death process takes a toll on organs. Between the decreased flow of blood and oxygen and the release of inflammatory proteins, that apparently damages kidneys. For another thing, kidneys that are removed after death inevitably endure cold time when they are outside the body on ice without any blood flow. Why not fork out a kidney before it becomes compromised by all the meds I'm taking, WB asked us. But he didn't stop there. Beyond a kidney, he explained, he wanted to donate the rest of his organs once his condition deteriorated so much that he could no longer breathe on his own. WB spoke calmly about his situation and about how ALS steals your ability to do things. Already, he told us, I have a hard time getting a spoon from a bowl into my mouth. He knew that in the near future, he would be confined to bed or to a wheelchair. And as for the end of his life, he remarked that he could only look forward to suffocating. When he said this, he didn't seem sad so much as at peace with his coming death. It is what it is, he said. It is what it is. Isn't everything what it is? I don't know why people say that, but he said, it is what it is. I can't change it. I probably won't be here in 5 years. To be honest, I may not be here in 2 years. WB hoped to turn his tragedy into someone else's miracle, but although his mind was clear and his intentions unmistakable, we had no choice but to disappoint him, we being the doctors that wrote this article. Two major obstacles have prevented us from helping WB and donating his organs. The first concerns his desire to donate a kidney while he's still alive. In his weakened state, will he tolerate the anesthesia and the surgery, or will they hasten his death? As doctors, we have sworn to do no harm. And yet, every Wednesday and Thursday morning, we remove kidneys from living donors. These patients don't get any medical benefit. To the contrary, they accept a small risk of complications, including hypertension and a slightly increased likelihood of their remaining kidney will fail. But they do experience a very real, if intangible, benefit, the experience of saving someone's life. In evaluating WB's request, we had to weigh carefully not only the risk to him, which WB clearly understood, but also the risk that a donor death would pose to our hospital. Transplant surgery programs in the United States are scrutinized by an alphabet soup of federal and non-governmental entities. A single bad outcome involving a living donor can lead to an investigation. While there are good reasons for this monitoring, it can cause surgeons to avoid complicated cases and innovation. The more difficult issues relates to his other organs. WB's prognosis is poor, as doctors indicate that in the near future, WB will no longer be able to breathe for himself and will need a tracheotomy and a ventilator in order to live. At this point, some ALS patients forego further life support and succumb to their disease. But there is currently no way to end one's life in this manner without jeopardizing one's organs and, with them, the chance to save other lives. From the earliest days of transportation, surgeons subscribed to an informal ethical norm known as the dead donor rule. That organ procurement should not cause a donor's death. The dead organ rule, that organ procurement should not cause the donor's death. This meant waiting until patients were, by all measures, completely dead, no heartbeat, no blood pressure, no respiration, in order to remove any vital organs. Unfortunately, few organs were still transplantable by this point, and those that were transplanted tended to have poor outcomes. In 1968, in an effort to address the shortage of transplantable organs, as well as the delivery of futile care to people in irreversible comas, an ad hoc committee at Harvard Medical School suggested that patients with no identifiable brain function could be designated as brain dead and become candidates for organ donation. This led to new laws enacted by most states. Under them, the new laws, doctors could remove organs from patients whose hearts were still beating without violating the dead donor rule. Failing to die fast enough, this is the next heading. But what about people who are terminally ill like WB? Neither the dead donor rule nor laws regarding brain death address his situation. Terminally ill patients' best, in many cases only, chance of passing on their organs is via a wrenching process known as donation after circulatory death, or DCD. A patient's doctor, a patient's doctor withdraws all life support. Okay, the patient's doctor withdraws all life support while an organ recovery team stands by. For organs to be successfully transplanted this way, however, the donor typically needs to die within an hour or two of being taken off life support. Otherwise, decreased blood flow leaves the organs unsuitable for transplantation. Over the course of a single week, while we were writing this article, three potential DCD donors at our transplant center had life support removed with the intention of donating their vital organs, but they had failed to die quickly enough. No transplants resulted. When organ donation works, families view it as a positive end to a tragedy. Our team remembers vividly the case of another ALS patient, a young father of three teenagers. He knew that he would never get off a ventilator, and he also knew that his organ goodbyes to his wife and his children. They hugged him, and then, with the family surrounding him, his doctors removed his breathing tube. Once he had taken his last labored breath, our team rushed into the operating room. We were just in time to recover his kidneys and liver. In the midst of their heartbreak, his family members were able to find some comfort in the idea that their husband and father had saved three people's lives. Unfortunately, not every withdrawal of life support ends with this heroism. We also remember that a young boy who had suffered major head trauma because of the boy's family believed deeply in the cold, sterile environment of an operating room. While our team waited in the wings, the boy died in his mother's arms, but not quickly enough to allow for the transplantation of his organs. This came at a particularly terrible blow, or came as a particularly terrible blow to his parents, who had hoped that their loss might help prevent someone else's. New rules that honor life is the next section of this story. The term brain death was meant to provide an objective legal definition for a group of patients whom we might otherwise describe as unrecoverable, but for terminally ill patients, a more useful ethical standard could involve the idea of imminent death. Once a person with a terminal disease reaches the point where only extraordinary measures will delay death, when the use of these measures is incompatible with what he considers a reasonable quality of life, and when he decides to stop aggressive care knowing that this will mean the end of his life, we might say that death is imminent. If medical guidelines could be revised to let people facing imminent death donate vital organs under general anesthesia, we could provide patients and families a middle ground, a way of avoiding futile medical care while also honoring life by preventing the deaths of other critically ill people. Moreover, healthy people could incorporate this imminent death standard into advanced directives for their end-of-life care. They could determine the conditions under which they would want care withdrawn and whether they would be willing to have it withdrawn in an operating room under anesthesia with subsequent removal of their organs. Some may argue that such a model could compromise doctors' care of critically ill patients. People who distrust the healthcare system sometimes make similar arguments, accusing physicians of providing lesser care to those who have signed up to become organ donors. In practice, though, a donor's doctors have little connection to those involved with organ recovery to avoid any conflict of interest. We can't imagine a scenario in which the doctors would give a patient inferior care so that her organs could be procured. Large numbers of hospital patients have no chance of meaningful recovery, including many of those with progressive neurological diseases like ALS or severe cardiac disease, as well as some stroke victims. A number of these brave people and their families wish to commit the final act of pure heroism in the form of organ donation. But even as the transplant waiting list stretches more than 120,000 patients long, the current system denies them this legacy. Now, that's 2016 numbers, by the way. It's probably worse nowadays. The next section is entitled A Dying Wish. As doctors, we are taught to do no harm. It may be time to redefine what we mean by harm. When we sent WB a draft of this article, we were nervous about how he might react. What can it be like to read a magazine article about whether your own organs should come out while you're still alive? He responded calmly and thoughtfully. His email read, I can no longer type, so I'm using the voice command module on my tablet. This means that sentence structure, grammar, and punctuation kind of go out the window, so bear with me. He agreed with our main ideas, and without skipping a beat, he challenged us again to remove one of his kidneys while it still had the best chance of saving a life. To his great disappointment, we informed him again that he is not a candidate for living donation. We are still haunted by WB's request. As he prepares to die, the thing he wants most is to save the lives of strangers. Shortly before this article went to press, WB told us that his disease was progressing faster than expected. He asked us what he could do to keep his organs oxygenated so that they could remain viable for transplantation. He had not planned on having a breathing tube put in when the time came, but he said that he would now consider doing so if it meant he could still be a donor. And he implored us once again to do more homework and to figure out how he could pass on his organs before it was too late. Maybe we will yet find a way to honor his dying wish. If we were to help WB donate a single kidney, and if he survived the experience, it might add some real value to his remaining days. For months, as we have turned WB's request over in our minds, we have repeatedly come back to one realization, that we are not as courageous as he is. So that's the end of the article. But then they added an update. Since this article was first published in April of 2015, which was about a year before copy I'm reading now. His health has deteriorated quickly, so this is a year later. Confined to a wheelchair, he has lost the use of his legs, arms, and hands. He receives all nutrition and medicine through a feeding tube. Given his current situation, very healthy in spite of physical ability losses, we explored the possibility of proceeding with living donation of a kidney, knowing that he would probably remain on a ventilator after surgery. Despite the controversial nature of this procedure, our medical center was quite supportive. Unfortunately, given the current laws in our state, which is Wisconsin, and in many others, even if he survived, and could breathe on his own after surgery, there is significant risk that we and our entire team, as well as our hospital, would be held accountable for accelerating his death, leading to the loss of our medical licenses, as well as to legal charges. We hope the law will change someday and that donation of at least one kidney will be an option for consenting patients with eminently terminal illnesses. This won't happen in time for WB. The only way to honor his final wish is to wait until he can no longer breathe, call an ambulance. In the intensive care unit, he would be placed on a ventilator, something he wanted to avoid unless for donor surgery. And then he would be evaluated for donor for organ donation. Eventually, all support would be withdrawn. If he died naturally, within a finite time, his organs would be procured. We would then try to make this work, but the timing is challenging and may limit his success. WB recently asked how to know when to come to the hospital. We told him, when each breath is too painful to take and you are not sure you will be able to take even one more breath, come in then. So that's the end of WB's update as to his current condition. That was a bunch of years ago, and I'm sure he's dead now, but the organ transplantation situation may or may not have changed. I'm not privy to what the legalities are, but I thought that might be an interesting little story for people to hear about. So I don't know how interesting you thought it was. You've got your eyelids propped open, so that's good.
I find, as strange as you may think it is, I find those types of stories and the information surrounding them very interesting. I read a lot of stuff, and you would you may not be surprised at all the stuff I read, but I read all kinds of stuff, and that really flows right down my alley.
I know you're a cerebral guy. I guess I was looking at it from the guy's point of view who was diagnosed with ALS. Yeah, it's got to be like a death sentence of the most lengthy, horrible torture, knowing what's coming up, knowing what's in store for you. I think I might climb up to the top of the Medicare for the Lazy Man World Headquarters Tower and maybe speed the process up a little bit. But does that make me a coward, or does that make me a person who is just wants to avoid a lengthy, pointless bunch of medical treatment? I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's a tough one. It really depends on which way you think about it, but it definitely is a tough one. I've as a mental exercise, I've kind of walked through those kinds of scenarios with myself often, but it depends. It really depends on the situation.
Well, I guess we're fortunate not to have to deal with it only in we don't have to deal with it in reality, only in speculative terms.
Right. Exactly. So I've got something, this is something we haven't done for a while.
Uh-oh. Is it going to hurt?
It's a definition. It's kind of a derivation of Stump the Insurance Expert.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. This never turns out well for me, does it?
Okay. So I've got some information, and I'm kind of doing a little bit different now, but let's give it a shot. I think it's interesting and very timely.
Well, lay it
so
on me.
Let's do a little bit of Stump Doug Jones, the insurance expert here. So what we're going to do is I'm going to name several things, several events that happened today in history.
On this date in history.
On this date in history.
All righty.
And one of the things that's on this list is incredibly timely, and I'll even go so far as to say coincidental, but it's very interesting that it came up today.
All right.
So what happened on today's date in 1990 as related to the National League?
Oh, boy. When it comes to sports, I'm going to be your least likely candidate to be able to answer correctly. And maybe that's why you chose that question. I'm guessing it's not Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier.
No.
Is it? I'm guessing it's not the first time the Cubs won the World Series since the 1920s or whatever. So
no.
I'm going to have to give up on that one, Randy.
Okay. Well, on today's date in 1990, there was a National League umpire arrested for stealing baseball cards.
Oh, boy. It's hard to believe that an umpire would be doing anything irresponsible or illegal as regards baseball. Don't we trust those people with our sport, our national pastime?
Maybe.
Okay.
All right. Well, you stumped me. Couple more.
Okay.
What happened on today's date in 2019? A little more current.
Okay. 2019 was 3 years ago. On this date in 2019, did it have to do with sports at all?
Nope.
Wow. Did it have to do with a, I can't even narrow it down. I'm sorry, but Randy, that's just too broad a question. I don't think I can answer that.
Okay. Well, this is the coincidental one. Today's date in 2019, Ukrainian comedian Vladimir Zelensky won the country's presidential election in a landslide.
Okay. So he was a comedian?
Yeah. He was a comedian before he became president of Ukraine.
I knew he was an actor of some kind. I didn't know he was a comedian, but I will tell you that I also knew that his predecessor was a hugely unpopular guy. And so that landslide part, I think you could have used a piece of warm toast as in place of Zelensky, and it probably would have won the election. So,
and
all right.
last but not least, 2021 happened. What happened today in 2021?
Well, I was busy enjoying the magnificent Arizona weather exactly 12 months ago. So that would be the most important thing in my life. I probably went outside and manufactured some vitamin D. And I came inside and maybe had a couple of cocktails in the evening.
Well, you're close, but no cigar.
Oh, rats. Okay. I'm a three-time loser. I'm a three-time loser today.
On today's date in 2021, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office announced that it will no longer prosecute prostitution.
Really?
Dismissing 914 open cases, part of a growing movement to change their approach to prostitution in New York.
How did I miss that? You would think that would have had a huge impact on my life, but it didn't for some reason. It completely escaped me.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that you go, oh, darn, I should have known that, but I didn't.
Absolutely. Well, I have no idea how that impacted everybody else in the country, but I guess the people in New York are at least not having to support a bunch of hookers in jail. Although every time I hear some woke, politically correct person describe a prostitute, they always use the term sex worker. Now, I don't like wokeness, and I don't like politically correct people. And every time I hear the word sex worker, I just my brain shuts down.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. Well, you know, we got to close up shop. We are out of gas. We are out of diesel. We're out of everything tonight.
And I'm out of being stumped. I'd rather that we discontinue that until the next time. I'll try it again next time.
Thank you, everyone, again, as always, for joining us. We appreciate every one of you, and we look forward to seeing every one of you back in the audience next time. Because without you, it's just Doug and me staring at each other over a screen.
And no good can come of that.
No good can come of that. But before we end up for today, send Doug some mail. He's complaining that he never gets a letter anymore. So send him something at dbj@mlmmailbag.com. Buy some of his paperbacks. Get them on order because they're going fast. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever, 2022. I'm still waiting for the audio, as is Doug. Mm. And it's going to be just amazingly really hard to get once we get it on the shelf.
Well, yeah, I'll have to start recording 2023 very soon.
So there's that. And then you can get a Kindle version. That's probably the fastest and easiest. And I think, Doug, didn't you also say the least expensive?
Least expensive. It's $3.80, and it's immediate. It's instant gratification.
Cool. So saying goodbye for Doug from the Fortress of Solitude in Cave Creek, Arizona, We have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Mr. Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma, and now the guy wondering what he's going to say to sign off, because I already did.
Bye-bye.
Perfect.